To start recording. Good day, everybody. Hope everyone's well. Those of you who have were not on the cost review subcommittee and have joined us, welcome. I will call the CROG Transportation Committee meeting for Monday, September 18th, 2023 to order. The first item is the roll call. That will be an electronic roll call that Karen will take so we don't have to run through us. Second item is the public forum. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to address the committee at this time? Hearing none and seeing none, we'll move on to adoption of the minutes of our meeting held on July 24th, 2023, and I'd entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
Patrice Carson, so moved.
Thank you, Patrice.
Chris Head, second.
Thank you. Are there any corrections, deletions, or additions? Hearing none and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? And abstentions. Again, please, your name and your community.
Donald Nunes, Enfield, abstains.
Thank you, Don.
Neil Page, Stanton, abstain.
Thank you, Neil. Any other extensions? Seeing none, the minutes are approved as distributed. We'll move into staff reports. And Roger, you're first with 60 seconds for safety.
Okay, thank you, John. I want to give an update on where we are with our Safe Streets and Roads for All grant that we applied for in 2022. And then we were notified that we were awarded in the last winter. And so first bullet there, we do have a draft agreement with Federal Highway Administration that we are working to get fully executed. We also have, CROG has a sub-award agreement with City of New Britain because they also are a sub-recipient of funds. So we're working with City of New Britain to get that executed. And then we hope to get that fully executed next month with Federal Highway Administration. Our last agenda item today is to for this committee to approve a resolution for Matt to sign all related documents to our Safe Streets and All Safe Streets and Roads for All grant. So I'll get into the details of that with our last agenda item today. So that grant was for $608,000 in federal funds for CROG and $350,000 for federal funds for City of New Britain. And so as part of that, part of the scope of our work will be to have a Vision Zero task force that would provide some oversight for our activities regarding our plan. And on the next slide, we have some, just a heads up on some suggestions for a CROG Vision Zero task force that would be responsible for oversight and implementation of our regional transportation safety plan, which is what we want to update with this money, this grant funds, and then update and implement. And so our idea at this point, these are suggestions, and the intent is that for next month, I would get a memo together for the Transportation Committee, kind of documenting some of this. So we're looking for any input prior to that. First bullet, that the Vision Zero Task Force would be appointed by the Policy Board. Second point there, Vision Zero Task Force would make recommendations to the Policy Board, MPO, through the Transportation Committee. And then potential membership, some general categories and where we solicit some the actual membership of this Vision Zero Task Force could be police chiefs or their designee regarding the, you know, it's important part of enforcement is a huge part of traffic safety, educators, someone responsible for outreach publicity, our own transportation committee members, those serving equity or underserved populations, those that represent vulnerable users, those are bicyclists, pedestrians, our local traffic authorities, potentially UConn safety circuit rider staff, general public, Prague staff, CONDOT, or federal highway. So those are some general categories. We no more than 15 members to kind of have a workable group. So those are some ideas. If you have any input, you know, on that as we move forward, please let us know. Otherwise, we'll get a little more fleshed out next month. That's
Thank
all.
Thank you, Roger. Any comments or questions from members of the committee? And we look forward to moving on that, Roger. Thank you. Elizabeth, with the PIL and IJA update.
Yes, thank you. Sent out a newsletter the first Thursday of the month is what we're shooting for a funding opportunities newsletter. So I just wanted to talk about some of the key opportunities that this committee might be interested in. The full list is here. The newsletter is up on the website now, in our should be in our news and events section today. And some of the key programs, the first being the USDOT Strengthening Mobility and Revolutionizing Transportation Smart Grants Program, which applications due October 10th. This is focused on conducting demonstration projects that would promote innovative solutions to make transportation systems safer and more efficient. There's information on the webpage, as well as links to the USDOT program page and the NOFOs, if anyone is interested in getting that. More information, always reach out to me as well. And the second program, and this was, the newsletter did not have a lot of information on this because the NOFO was just released last week for Thriving Communities program. And there's really two asks with this opportunity right now. The first is the discretionary grant program, which is focused on funding what they're calling capacity builders. So teams of capacity builders that would provide technical assistance to communities that need it. And then the second ask or the opportunity is if you are a community that needs additional assistance to make yourselves more competitive in applying for federal funding opportunities, then there's a call for letters of interest. So the you can submit a letter of interest to be on this list of recipients that the capacity builder teams would then be able to assist. There's a national network as well as a regional network. It's limited though. There's only like four or five recipients of the discretionary grant that they're anticipating for each of the national and the regional network. If you're a community in need, there's like maybe 50 or 60 communities that they're expecting to fund on the national level, and then even more on the regional level. So there's an opportunity for communities. Today updated our webpage to include the various lists of communities because they have a couple different categories. There's areas of persistent poverty, disadvantaged communities, rural communities. So the webpage today includes, the Prague website today includes those communities like East Hartford, Enfield, Hartford, Manchester, New Britain, Vernon, Bloomfield, Plainville, West Hartford, Windsor, Mansfield, and then for rural, Andover, Columbia, Hebron, Mansfield, Marlborough, Stafford, and Willington. And then also worth noting that the Connecticut CIRCA has issued state-specific, and there's, I believe, over up to 21 of our communities eligible on the state the criteria, so there's a potential for even more communities to be eligible for the assistance offered by the capacity holders. Information is again on the webpage, or feel free to follow up with me as well. And then next is We have issued information in advance of the Bridge Investment Program. So with product staff, GIS staff prepared some maps using the National Bridge Inventory and the ratings of fair and poor that was available, bridges in fair and poor condition. And this is an example of one of the maps that is available that identifies the bridges that could be eligible for the Bridge Investment Program once it becomes, once it's announced for this year, which the initial document said summer 2023, but it's looking like maybe they may combine two funding years in the fiscal year 2024 instead. So maybe in October or something, but we're tracking that opportunity and we have this information. So if you want to take a look at which bridges might be eligible for this program in your communities, this is available on our website. And then next up is an announcement about an electric vehicle charging station seminar. It's going to be an in-person seminar in this room. Third floor boardroom at Prague, and we're going to have consultants and specialists familiar with siting, permitting, and construction of EV charging stations in this area, so Connecticut, Massachusetts, as well as representatives from Eversource talking about the electrical utility services and things related to that, and then as well as an overview of funding opportunities that might assist municipalities in funding charging stations. And DOT also has a workshop, an online workshop that I believe is tomorrow that is in the newsletter. So if you'd like, thank you. information about the Wednesday workshop, thank you. Wednesday, September 20th, two sessions, 8 a.m. session and 7 p.m. session offered by Connecticut DOT on their National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program, the NEVI program. And I believe that's all I have. Any questions, please feel free to reach out. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Caitlin, you have the next two, the Infill Traffic Impact Study and the Active CT Vision Zero webinar.
Great. Thank you so much. All right. So really quickly, just wanted to provide an update on the Infill Traffic Impact Study. We started this back in 2021, and we're looking to wrap it up by the end of the year. So basically, this study asked the question, you know, the current Enfield Square Mall is nowhere near fully occupied. So what could potential redevelopment of the mall look like? We did a market study to sort of answer that question. And then what would the impact of that development look like on the roadways? We identified about 15 specific intersections and then wanted to specifically look at the corridors of 190 and 220 through the area of the Enfield Square Mall. And then, of course, also what would the mitigation measures that would be necessary to accommodate that development? So due to the market analysis, we identified a mix of residential, entertainment, retail, and some medical office and some restaurants there as an economically viable opportunity. One of the takeaways, though, from this is regardless of what happens to the mall, even the future no-build scenario likely is going to require some sort of mitigation. A lot of the intersections start to really degrade in terms of level of service from A, Bs, and Cs all the way down to Es and Fs. So some of our recommendations are going to be, I think, useful for the town and the state, no matter what happens. But one of the things that's also worth mentioning is that the future no-build condition, which used, you know, ITE trip generation numbers for a regional shopping mall and does not distinguish between a, you know, partially or a fully occupied mall. And when we compare that to our future build scenario for a mixed-use development, the numbers are really very similar. I think our development proposed a little bit more on the trip generation side. So that just means that minimal mitigation is really necessary as far as what's required by the development that we envision being there. So one of the things that we did is we did want to take the traffic impact study question on the required piece a little bit further and really kind of explore additional measures that might make 220 and 190 corridors a little bit more bike and ped friendly. And this is after conversations with the town and also the results of our visual preference survey, which got over 1,000 people responding to that. So we did do that as well. So just shifting really quickly, present high level sort of takeaways and recommendations out of the study. When it comes to bike and ped friendliness, we looked at some of the more obvious options and pretty much had to eliminate them. We looked at a road diet where we were reducing travel lanes in the study area. And pretty much, I think just about every intersection, we were focusing on 220 as our main sort of bike ped vision to connect to Thompsonville there. Pretty much, I think every intersection when we did that failed level of service F and had some pretty extreme queuing. We did also look at some roundabouts in a few areas. I will say, if you're familiar with the area, Freshwater Boulevard and 220, there's maybe a future where more study is needed to explore a two-lane roundabout. But right now it's kind of on the cusp and further study was outside of our scope. And then also we did look at a roundabout, sort of a, you know, double teardrop or peanut roundabout over by the I-91 ramps in 220. And that also failed pretty miserably. Just for some context, we were looking at 9-minute delays and 1-mile queuing. So we did not move those recommendations forward, but I did want to say that we looked at them. Some recommendations that are, again, moving forward and will be useful no matter what happens with the mall are things like traffic signal coordination, improved pedestrian phasing, as well as vehicle detection. One location in particular has a split phasing at one location, maybe more, and we're removing that as the proposal. We also have some recommendations such as further studying ways to incorporate protected bike facilities. This traffic impact study scope did not allow us to get into geometries or lane widths. So that would be an area of future study, as well as looking regarding transit and maybe in combination with the Enfield train station, but looking at a potential mode shift. Lastly, I just wanted to touch on one of the other things we looked at was exploring access modifications to the mall site as a way of helping to control traffic and improve pedestrian safety. So we looked at three unique ones. The recommendation that's going to be moving forward is what we refer to as access option A, which is not the most creative name maybe, but that if you are again familiar with the area, when you come off of I-91 onto 220, that first right that you can make into the mall at the light, access option A proposes to remove that. So we looked at a couple of others. There was another similar one that looked at restricting that to ride in and ride out only. And both actually do pretty well. Both have benefits as far as providing additional queuing capacity and reducing delays. But removing it would be the potential access mitigation strategy that the town would like to see in the future should a private developer come forward to redevelop the site. I'll just close by saying that we have a public comment or a public meeting scheduled at the beginning of October on the 3rd, and that we would be looking to get approval by the Enfield PNZ at the end of the month. We're anticipating the 26th, and then we'll be back before you in November. If there's any questions, I will happily answer them.
Any questions for Caitlin? Thank you, Caitlin, and we'll move on to the active CT vision.
All right, thank you. So much quicker than my last update. This is just to let everybody know, if you haven't already, I feel like we've spammed a lot of people with this information, but we have an Vision Zero webinar as part of our active CT efforts. And thank you, Kara, for putting that link in the chat to the registration page. It's just going to be a quick one. It's 1 hour tomorrow. We would encourage everybody to come. We've got some representatives from West Hartford and the team there working on Vision Zero to talk about their experiences, as well as the team, the consultant, as well as Barca Patel, who's the director of infrastructure down in Jersey City. And they'll be speaking about their experience. For those of you who don't know, Jersey City achieved Vision Zero in 2022. So I'm really looking forward to that part of the presentation as well. And we hope you can join us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Caitlin. Executive Order 44, Rob?
Yes. Recently, August 21st, an executive engineering construction directive came out from DOT, signed by the commissioner. And this is appears on the screen and also is on our website. It's a longer document than what appears on the screen. Basically, what this is three new controlling design criteria for DOT. Right now, they have 15 specified controlling design criteria in their highway design manual. This would add three, one for pedestrian facilities, bicycle facilities, and transit provisions. Now, there's a lot of detail in this directive, so if you want to peruse through it for details, feel free. There's more details than certainly I can go into right now, but the short of it is that if you have a project that's going through CONDA, mainly a CMAC or a transportation alternatives project or other, or a bridge project or something of that nature, these new criteria are going to apply. It doesn't mean, just like the other 15 criteria, it doesn't mean you can't not comply with them, but if you don't comply with them, you're going to need a design exception from probably the chief engineer over at DOT. Now, the big question is, how is this going to apply to LOTSIP? And it seems intuitive that it would apply just like the rest of the design manual, where it's really going to apply on state roadways mostly for you to get an encroachment permit, because there's no real design exceptions process in LOTSIP. So really, on state roadways, if you don't meet these criteria, just like if you don't meet their other criteria in the design manual, you might have to explain that in order to get an encroachment permit. If you're not on a state road, the thought is it would apply just like the other criteria do now, where our consultant, when doing review, would identify it as a critical comment, and the town would reply whether or not they can meet the criteria, and that documentation would go in your files as to what your response would be, whether you can or cannot meet it. And that's all that's really required for LOTSIP. But there was concern over this, and certainly we're gonna get in writing that that is the, what we assume is the case. So we will get back to you if it's any different than that. So we plan to follow up on that. So I don't know if there's any questions with this. This only applies to projects initiated after September 1st. Now, they talk about things that are federal definitions, like design approval date before August 31st would not apply. For our purposes, I'm guessing that would be a commitment to fund letter before August 31st would not apply to this directive would not apply. I don't know if there's any questions.
Rob, I have one question. Does anybody know how this will affect the TRIP grant program?
The rural program. I would assume it would be one of the criteria. And that, even though that's not federally funded, that's going through CONDA, and I would assume that they'd be reviewing that in with their design manual, and this, so it would apply. You'd probably need a design exception, I'm guessing. I don't know how planning runs that program. I haven't been involved in the design and construction process of that.
Okay.
Plus, it's a new program. So.
Yeah, they're still in the project selection, solicitation selection stage, and hire a consultant to review the application from an engineering point of view. But I would think it would be based on the roadway classifications in the project proposals that are submitted, there would be no time based on any requirements.
I was just thinking, since they asked for the solicitations long before they came out with the directive, are they going to evaluate the solicitations relative to the directive when, you know, that information wasn't available at the time?
Maybe we can get some clarity on that.
Sure. I haven't seen guidelines as to how that is going to run, that whole program, whether it's going to be like LOTSIP with the regions or whether it's going to be a different way. So there's a lot of questions.
Yeah, it's a good question. Look into it.
Hey, Rob, just
not just state highways. This is any road in an urbanized area, town or state. So, you know.
Right. Well.
Like we had the discussion, we just need to get that letter you get because, like I said, this has big impacts. And if you have a 28-foot wide road, you can't meet these criteria.
Yeah, I mean, you'd
without widening the road,
you'd seek a design exception, which is not uncommon. Right?
Yeah, but I'm just worried about they're coming back with comments like we just got in our last comment that they no longer want us to use HDPE pipe under roads. They want concrete pipe. You know, they're going to come down and, you know, this it's a trickle effect. You know how it works.
Yeah, and just because you can get a design exception doesn't mean it's granted, right? So,
and all of us have to have complete street policies, and we all have to do our ADA facility, you know, plans too. So we're all going to, you know, we all have to have these criteria to get funding. So, you know, we all have to do it, but got to be a balance.
Seemed to me, Rob, that this sets up that on every rural project, there's going to have to be an exception. Right from the get-go.
I haven't looked in detail. I think we got it, yeah.
You know, we'll as Peter points out, rural roads, by and large, narrow. They don't have the space to do this. Without widening, you know, presumably with taking. So that it seems to me that any project in any of the rural communities and any project on any rural road in any community is going to have an exception.
I don't know if that's the case.
It would have been useful maybe if the state had recognized that up front and provided for that in this policy statement.
I think that it'd only be the case if you propose a bike facility on that roadway. It wouldn't, the way I read it, it wouldn't be the case if you weren't proposing a bike lane on a rural road. You wouldn't have to meet the bike lane criteria unless you were proposing a bike lane.
My sense is that's open to interpretation. This policy statement is pretty broad. Right from the stop. I mean, it is the policy to provide.
I mean, you have to read this. I mean, they're talking about sidewalks and two sides of the street and town centers. And there's a lot of stuff in here. I mean, and good. If you can do it, you can do it. And we all should be, do it if we can. But we just can't get penalized if we can't do it. And hopefully these exceptions don't we can get.
Well, one thing that I was thinking of, and I didn't want to bring it up here because I don't want to totally commit to it, but, you know, is looking into this and having a subcommittee meeting that discusses what this means, looking into all the criteria in detail. You know, obviously you got to think of all the implications of everything on all different types of roads. And at first glance, it's difficult to do that, but we can certainly follow up on that and think about having a subcommittee meeting that goes over all these in detail and digs into the details of the criteria, because it's a little lengthy to do that, you know, or talk to do that as one item on a TC meeting, you know.
I think that's an excellent suggestion, and I think there'd be a number of folks who want to join in. I think, and I would like to emphasize, and I'm sure Peter's in the same place, we don't object to what we endorse what Conduct's trying to achieve here, but there has to be a practicality to it as well, and a recognition that that not every situation in this particular position is the same.
Right. And I think some clarity behind the scenes, some clarity between us and the department on the extent and intent would be helpful too. So we'll try to get that.
Thank you.
I do think it's kind of refreshing, the change of mindset, because I feel like in the past, the DOT has kind of actively resisted attempts to do this on the part of some of the towns. And the fact that the state is now saying this is a priority for us, you know, we're going to continue it in everything going forward, that may give the towns more leverage when they're asking for this on state roads. Or not?
Good point. Any other discussion on Executive Order 44? Thank you all. Thank you, Peter. Rob, CT Fast Track.
Yes.
Corridor Advisory Committee.
Yes. I don't know how many of you are aware that Prague in the past had regularly hosted a CT Fast Track Hartford Line Corridor Advisory Committee, and that COVID and personnel changes here had kind of slowed down the frequency of those meetings. What we're going to try to do is start ramping that up again. The reason why you may not have heard about it is it was mainly the first elected officials from all the towns along those lines that attended the meetings and that were members of the committee. This is the whole line from New Haven up to Springfield and the CT Fast Track exclusive busway. And the thought was is that this committee would not only advocate for completion of the CT rail line, double tracking stations, service improvements, but also TOD, advocate and share information on TOD at all these station areas along the two fixed route exclusive guideways. So we're planning to have our next meeting in October 20th at 9 a.m. We have two co-chairs, one from North Haven and one from West Hartford. Sherry Cantor would be our representative, our co-chair representative, and then Sprague would have a co-chair representative. We'd alternate meetings between Krog and Sprague, setting them up and hosting them. And they, you know, between each one of us would hold it annually, so there'd be 2 a year. And discussions as before, and we're going to get into detail at the first meeting and discussing what any roles and responsibilities, or if we're going to change how we do things in the meeting. But basically, transit-oriented development, conduct updates. We've always invited DOT officials to attend these and speak. Service planning for the transit routes, capital improvements, ridership, and things of that nature. So we look forward to kicking that off and having it a little more regular and regimented schedule for the Corridor Advisory Committee. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
I have a comment, Robin. Let's put my political hat on. I'm wondering whether, you know, I know you're only doing these twice a year, and I'm wondering whether, I'm sure it's all set, whether a mid-November meeting might have been a more appropriate when we, in case we get some modification in who the first elected officials are in the communities along the line this coming November 7th.
Yeah, we have already selected the date. I can bring that up with the co-chairs if they want to change it. I think the thought was to get it in before the holidays, and that maybe some newly elected officials would be overwhelmed at first, and maybe they'd be more able to come in late winter at the second one or early spring. So that was kind of the thought there, but I can certainly bring it up to the co-chairs.
Yeah, I just, particularly if you're going to be discussing, you know, changing roles or processes and whatnot, it seemed to me you'd want the most up-to-date membership. I can see your point as well. Any comments to Rob? Now, Rob, do you want to do the CLEAR webinar first, or do we want to have Matt's report?
We can go by the agenda, and we'll have Matt's report.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, John. Good afternoon, committee members. Thank you for attending today. I just have four items that I'll speak to quickly. The first item, I imagine I'm preaching to the choir here, but I thought it was interesting to note that it's National Roundabouts Week. What do you think about that? That's great. I love it. And the DOT is working to commemorate and celebrate the role that roundabouts play to improve transportation safety, as well as reducing carbon emissions. And according to national data, converting a signalized intersection to a roundabout results in a 78% reduction in severe crashes, a 48% reduction in overall crashes. And the data is even better in Connecticut. So there was a recent study of five roundabouts that found an 81% reduction in severe crashes and a 49% reduction in total crashes. So I thought it was really interesting to see this, given our work with the roundabout study and to promote this infrastructure across the region. The second item, I wanted to thank and commend Elizabeth Sanderson and everyone who's involved in putting together that funding opportunities newsletter. We've had two editions thus far. A lot of work goes into it. And we're looking for your feedback. You know, we want your feedback in terms of how useful you find this information to be, if there might be anything missing that you'd like to see us include in that report. But a big thanks to Elizabeth and our other colleagues for putting that together. The third item, wanted to let you know, if you weren't aware, the state does have a bicycle and pedestrian advisory board that is staffed by the DOT. Mark Moriarty is a member. Sandy Fry, former Frog employee, is the current chair. And they are meeting this Friday at 9 a.m. It's a virtual meeting. And Caitlin and Palmer and I will be presenting. And we're going to be talking about our work on the East Coast Greenway gap closure and also about the upcoming bike priority network study. So really looking forward to that. And it's a good group. And I think they're doing good work to promote that type of infrastructure across the state. And then last but certainly not least, wanted to note that CROG's executive committee did recently endorse a strategic vision for CROG. We're calling the document our strategic playbook, and it includes an updated mission, a set of core values and guiding principles, as well as a set, I believe there are eight strategic priorities for CROG for the next 3 to 5 years. We'll be presenting this plan to the full policy board later this month. And then I'll work with Rob and Kara. I would like to get it on the agenda for the Transportation Committee just to talk about its relevance to your work. That completes my report, John. Happy to take any questions that you or other members may have.
Thank you, Matt. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
Yeah, I just want to thank Matt and Rob for coming out and meeting with our first new town manager last week. We appreciate that.
You're welcome, Peter. I really enjoy that opportunity and making a concerted effort to meet with all the new CEOs in the region, as well as to present to all of our legislative bodies. So slowly working our way around the region. And I think the town of Marlborough made an excellent choice in their first town manager.
Thank you, Matt. Rob, the UConn Clear webinar?
Yeah, there's a webinar tomorrow at 1 o'clock, and it's UConn Clear is putting it on. And if you don't know, CLEAR stands for, I had it written down here. Well, it's something about development. And I don't see where I had it written down. What is it?
Could be Center for Land Use Education and Research.
There we go. That's what it is. Center for Land Use Education Research. So anyhow, they are having a webinar tomorrow to talk about the new stormwater quality manual. If you don't know, the old stormwater quality manual was from 2004. There's a draft of it on DEEP's website. They plan to make it final this fall. They don't have a more exact date than that right now. This is a webinar to talk about the new manual and how it impacts permitting and other items like that, and in general, general stormwater permitting. So I plan to attend to learn more. What's up?
Is it next week?
Is it next week?
Next week, yeah.
Oh, well then I'm gonna, yeah. Well then I'm not gonna be able to attend it. So you have more time, it's next Tuesday, sorry.
Thank you, Rob. Any questions? We're clear now, it's next Tuesday, not tomorrow. All right, Rob, your TIP amendments.
This is me again, yep. Yes, we have five TIP amendments. The first three are SDP monies. SDPH and SDPSP are what we used to call SDP Urban. SDPA is SDP Anywhere, so we're always happy to get funding that can be applied anywhere around the state. So that's number three. The first two is the one is to rehab the bridge carrying High Street over Route 72. If you might know, if you travel through New Britain all the time, there's a big tunnel that 72 goes under through. That's this. The top of this is that bridge. Bridge 088 or Project 088196 is the bridge, or Bridge 04247. So anyhow, it's for rehab of that bridge. The second one is in Windsor. This is a culvert with perforations, some steel culvert to fix that on Route 159. And then SDP Anywhere funds for sign supports on 291. And those are all in accordance with what we what our policies are. Then we have bridge program funding for bridges on Route 72 and on I-91. And so staff recommends approval of the TIP amendments.
Thank you, Rob. Any questions? I'd entertain a motion to approve the TIP amendments and recommend same to the MPO.
Patrice Carson, so moved.
Thank you, Patrice. Is there a second?
Eric Anderson, second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? They are approved and will be passed on to the policy board / MPO. Request for lots of funding increases. Satoria?
Hey, thank you, John, and good afternoon, everybody. So this is a funding increase request from the town of Hebron for the Main Street, Wall Street intersection improvement project. They're looking for a lots of funding increase of $602,094.60 from $1,036,800. To $1,638,894.60. And this is a 58% increase, and it's based on a competitive low bid of a little over $1.3 million. The low bid plus 10% incidentals and 10% in contingencies is the amount that the town is requesting. The project was originally approved under the 2015 solicitation. So the town has successfully completed its design process, and it was also issued an authorization to advertise letter back in March 31st, and it held two bid openings. The first one was on June 8th, and the second one was on August 24th. In the first bid opening, the town only received one bid, so they rebid the project and received two bid packages in the second bid opening. And those are highlighted in the memo that was included in the packet. So the disparity primarily is due to the bid prices, inflation, increases in a variety of unit prices, and also they had unforeseen traffic logistics. Traffic will be maintained through this busy intersection during construction, and it's obviously going to make it more challenging to construct. So the higher bids were the result of a full depth roadway pavement representing an increase of $164,696, an addition of a traffic person, which is $29,000, mobilization of project closeout, an addition of $103,448, and other unit prices amounting to $85,000. So these combined with the increases to the percentage-based estimating items resulted in a total of $603,094.50. So we want to allow the town to accept the lowest responsible bidder with costs that are substantially higher due to the increased unit prices. Staff recommends committee approval of an additional $602,094.50. Of lots of funding for the Hebron Main Street Wall Street intersection improvement project.
Thank you, Satoria. Questions or comments? Well, first, County Hebron wish to say anything? Are they on?
Not sure.
It's not. All right, any member of the committee have any questions or comments?
Larry Burrell, move to approve.
Motion is made to approve. Is there a second?
Eric Anderson, second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Opposed? Abstentions? It's approved unanimously and will be forwarded to the Policy Board MPO. Suffield.
Okay, thank you again. I think this might be a little bit of an easier one. This is for Suffield Farmington Canal Heritage Trail Project, and this was approved in the 2022 solicitation. They received a commitment to fund letter for $1.2 million back in March of this year, and they're requesting a scope modification that will increase the length of the trail from 4,700 feet to 6,550 feet. And this is because of, based on the feedback from the Connecticut Office of the Rail, the town will eliminate the proposed replacement of a triple 72-foot drainage culvert with a pedestrian bridge. So back in, I think it was initially in March, before the commitment to fund, the town received a funding increase approval from the committee for the removal of this culvert. And so now, since the Office of the Rail will not approve this or recommends, has concerns about it, they are not able to remove it. So they had initially requested the funding increase back in March. This was the cost, as I indicated, associated with replacing the culvert with the pedestrian bridge. But the town, the Office of Rail expressed concerns with the planned culvert replacement. So specifically, they said that if the culvert were replaced with the bridge, it would need to be designed to support a return of the future rail use. And so, also, there was an existing fiber optic line along the trail and that may conflict with the proposed bridge abutments. So the town deemed the rail bridge was cost prohibitive with the existing Lotset budget. So instead, based on that, the town decided to forego the culvert replace removal and installation of the pedestrian bridge, and instead proposed to extend the trail or the project limits north to encompass the entire trail within Suffield. So staff recommends committee approval of the Suffield Farmington Canal Heritage Trail Project scope modification request to expand the length of the trail improvements from 4,700 feet to 6,550 feet and eliminating the replacement of the culvert with a pedestrian bridge. And this is going to result in an overall decrease in project cost from a little over $1.2 million to $730,000.
Thank you, Satoria. I have one question that just dawned on me. Will we give Suffield a credit for this reduction towards a future project, or is they just the way we have balanced other projects with other communities over time the other way?
They were originally, not necessarily, unless the project supports it, originally they were approved by our committee for, I think it was a little over $900,000. We came to the committee with an increase, and that's, but they actually received a commitment to fund letter for the $1.2 million. But, you know, the project would have to support the $1.2 million in order for us, you know, in order for the town to utilize the funding. So I guess we don't, we would not get
it. Is also unclear, you know, the bids could come in high. And initially the project, as Satoria said, was a $900,000 project, which we gave, which we had a cost increase for before. So the, I think seeing they're back down to 730, it's near what their original approval was.
Does Suffield wish to make any comments?
Hey everybody, Bill Hawkins here, Director of Planning for the Town of Suffield. Not really, John. I just, you know, thank Krog and Satoria. Her memo summarizes it rather well. We just ran into these issues with the Office of Rail, determined that, you know, the costs would just be prohibitive for the project. So we're pivoting and looking to do, you know, more work in terms of paving along the whole length in Suffield. So that's all.
Thank you, Bill. Any comments, questions from members of the committee? A motion to approve would be in order.
So moved. Eric Anderson, Town of Andover.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Patrice Carson, second. Oh.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? It's unanimous, and it will be so recommended to the policy board / MPO.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you're up again, Satoria, for the 2024 LOTSA project selection policy, which we had a good, healthy discussion of in the cost review subcommittee, which did recommend unanimously to the full committee that it be approved with a couple of minor modifications that I'm sure Satoria will discuss with us.
Yes, so I'll just go through the modifications, but you know, thank you to the subcommittee for recommending its approval of the selection policy. This is for the 2024 solicitation. The allocations are outlined. We kind of went through all the allocations. So the only recommendations or changes, I should say, from the subcommittee were we are going back to, for under the criteria for the minor pavement rehabilitation, we had increased the complete streets to 15. We're reducing it back to 5, which was originally what it had been in the last probably 2 or 3 solicitations, or probably for a while. So the total possible points are going to be 50 for that specific category, which is minor pavement rehabilitation and pavement preservation. In regards to, because we did that and reduced it, we also have to reduce the bicycle and pedestrian projects and standalone sidewalk projects. So Originally, we had increased the mobility. So now we're reducing it back to, instead of 16, we're reducing it to 15, but we are increasing safety, which is our focus for this solicitation, from 19, which was last solicitation, to 20. So it would be 15 for improved mobility, 20 for safety, with a total possible points of 20.
Good.
I mean, oh. I'm sorry, 50. You're correct. 50. I don't know. I was looking at 20. So 50. Correct. So those are the only two changes.
Thank you, Satoria. Any questions or comments from members of the committee? Well, then entertain a motion to endorse the project selection policy.
Devin Copperway, Town of Stafford.
Larry, second.
Larry Burrell, second.
Thank you both. Any further discussion? All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? It's approved unanimously. And thank you, Satoria, for all your hard work on this.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Barry, you're up on the endorsement of TOD roles, visioning, viability, and tools analysis. That is a mouthful.
It is. Thank you, John. So I am looking for Transportation Committee endorsement of this study's final recommendations to go up to the policy board in a couple of next week. So this study started now a handful of years ago, working with the 8 municipalities along the CT Fast Track and Hartford Line corridors. Each community selected a site within their municipality to then have us do a financial viability analysis of that location based on the moat that they could fit on that site and with TOD given their current zoning. And then looking at kind of proof and pro formas for each of those sites so that the towns have kind of a baseline set of information to move forward with speaking with developers and hopefully starting to move some projects forward. It was more of an academic and desktop exercise, so there wasn't a public outreach component to this. And the other piece of the study was kind of the roles and responsibilities piece. And the study did come out with recommendations for sort of how can the region, the municipalities, and DOT work together moving forward to implement TOD within the region. Kind of generally, and Caitlin Palmer and her department will sort of be taking the lead on that moving forward. She was very involved in the tail end of this study as well.
Thank you, Kara. Any questions or comments from members of the committee? Hearing or seeing none, entertain a motion to approve the resolution.
Frank Dallaripa, moved.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Resolution. Motion to approve the resolution is approved unanimously.
Thank you.
Number 9, an authorization authorizing resolution for FHWA Safe Streets and Roads. Roger.
Thank you, John. So we're looking for the committee to approve recommending to the policy board this resolution for Matt to sign all related agreements for our Safe Streets and All Roads for All grant. So this includes a federal grant of $608,000 for CROG and $350,000 for the city of New Britain for a total of $958,000 in federal funds. And this would give our executive director authorization to sign all related agreements with federal highway sub-agreements, consultant agreements, and so forth for that Safe Streets and Roads for All grant.
Thank you, Roger. Any discussion on the proposed resolution? Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion to approve the authorizing resolution.
Frank Del Rupo, so moved.
Thank you, Frank. Is there a
Patrice second? Patrice Carson, second.
Thank you, Patrice. Any further discussion? Hearing seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion to approve the resolution is passed unanimously and will be recommended so to the policy board / MPO. Any other business, guys? Rob, Kara?
I think we're good.
Also, does the committee have any other business? Well, thank you all for your participation and entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved, Patrice Carson.
Thank you, Patrice. Larry, second.
Larry Burrell, second.
Thank you, Larry. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any nays? Okay. Thank you all. Have a great rest of the day and a good week.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, staff.